Welcome, everybody, all the diehards back there. I think we should demand that you all sit in front. But for the meantime, I will call the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue to order. We have just one thing on our agenda today, and I think we know how we're going to proceed, but I will open a work session on Senate Bill 1530. So, Paul, why don't you run us through where we are on this?
Madam Chair, Senate Bill 1530 was a committee bill introduced, pre-session filed, and that bill establishes the Revenue Technology Modernization Fund for the Department of Revenue. And the key element to the bill is that it sets out a process for establishing a baseline to be used for a performance-based contract. It does not. The Dash 2 amendment eliminates the expenditure limitation and the emergency clause because there isn't funding at this time. So that's in the Dash 2. The bill itself has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It's a no revenue impact. You have a Dash 2, or you have a fiscal impact statement with it, and it's a light because it's on its way to the Ways and Means Committee by subsequent referral. And also in discussions with the chair and the vice chair, we have in front of you a letter to the co-chairs of Ways and Means, and that's in your packet. And what that letter basically says is it suggesting that the bill go to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation. And it points out that there is the committee recognizes a critical need for the Department of Revenue to upgrade its core technology and fully supports providing adequate resources. However, there is concern around the method of financing the project and the extent to which DOR has adequately explored alternative approaches. So goes on to recommend that the Ways and Means Committee further investigate the costs and benefits of the performance contract method of finance in comparison with a direct procurement before committing additional resources to the project.
And then Senator Morse and I think probably all of us were all also concerned about having the appropriate level of legislative oversight as this goes down the road. And Paul, maybe you could just describe to us how that's handled in Senate Bill 1530.
Madam Chair, if you look in your Dash 2 amendments, there is reference to Legislative Revenue Office in the original bill. The Dash 2 changes the location of that. If you look at Section 2, Sub 1, it has Department of Revenue pays the contractors a percentage of revenue that exceeds the baseline amount that the department sets after consultation with the Legislative Revenue Office. So in other words, the Legislative Revenue Office is in consultation with the department and determining that baseline. Remember, that baseline would be predetermined based on a lot of the work actually the department is doing now. And then revenue above that would go into that fund.
Right. So this strengthens the legislative role.
The legislative role, and I think probably would be a factor in negotiations, too. There would be an established baseline going in.
Okay. And, of course, we all know who the Legislative Revenue Office reports to. Us. Yeah. So.
Yes, my statutory appointing authority is the House and Senate Revenue Committee chairs.
Okay. All right.
Whoever they may be.
Whoever they may be. And however long they may last in the job. All right. Are there questions from the committee?
No questions. Just a comment that, if this was some other bill and we read a fiscal that said, the cost of the undefined technology project is unknown. The potential increase in revenue resultant is unknown. The percentage paid to the potential contractor is unknown. And the potential administrative costs are unknown. I mean, how willing would we be to pass a bill, you know?
Well, we would, but this is a lie.
I understand that, but those are many of our concerns, so.
Madam Chair, if we might have the department.
Would you like the department to
come forward?
As if you were sitting in front, you wouldn't have to walk so far.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Eric Smith from the Department of Revenue, and I manage the Program Management Office.
Thank you. And my question kind of follows up a little bit with Senator Telfer. If I was asked the question, how do you, in your baseline, know what is underreported and evaded reporting in a way that when you begin to, I mean, presently today, to set that baseline, and then know what the benefits are of this new technology and system?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, would you like me to describe at least the premise that we're working on to establish the baseline so that I didn't quite understand the nature of your question with about knowing what was underreported or not reported, but I can explain maybe what we're looking at and see if that does answer your question. The collections on the total enforcement effort that we're monitoring in terms of whether it's a non-filer or somebody who reported tax but did not pay or that underreported tax we find in audit, all that rolls up into at some point a payment that's received as an account receivable, a late tax payment. And so we can look historically of what our enforcement efforts have generated in terms of payments that are a result of enforcement activities that are late tax payments. And so in aggregate, if we can see what our efforts have been, and then after improving our business processes, taking advantage of the new technology, we see that there's an increase of the payments of late tax over what we thought we would do, that would capture, we think, a number of different types of enforcement activities, non-filers, underreported tax, and the such. Did that answer your question?
Well, it does. This is a whole world that I really don't understand. But, if I was asked the question, how you develop that baseline, because that's the benefit paid to the contractor.
Correct.
The underreported and the unreported and the evaded, I know we've had hearings here in the past on those issues. And there's a wide variability in those areas.
Yes.
If I could add something, Madam Chair. One of the things that we have been working with the department on is a budget note that came out of the 2011 session. And it requires the department working with us and the Office of Economic Analysis to estimate enforcement revenue. So they've done quite a bit of work in this area through their revenue research department, and to try to identify the components of enforcement revenue, everything from non-filing to different types of underreporting. And that, as you can imagine, becomes very nuanced in terms of how those dollars come in and how they're flagged. So there has been quite a bit of groundwork done, and I think it may be worthwhile for the committee, perhaps in one of the interim meetings, to go through. The department has a draft report they prepared for the Ways and Means Committee, and it might be worth going through that report and looking at some of the definitions that they've come up with. So I think they've made some real progress in terms of establishing a framework to look at the different types of enforcement payments that come in.
Madam Chair?
Senator Telfer.
Thank you. The amnesty program that was pursued recently, do you see that affecting the establishment of that baseline at all? I mean, is it going to skew it in any way?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, it's exactly those types of events that we try to adjust for. And if you see some anomalies for a certain activity, you look maybe a longer look-back period to try and normalize what you think your activities would be. It could be one substantially large but unusual tax payment, for example. There are a number of things that we would look to normalize that. So, yes, we would try and adjust for those things.
Follow-up question. Does the economic forecast, I mean, not the forecast, but as the economy hopefully starts to turn itself around here, how will that play into the establishment of the baseline?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, that's probably the hardest question. And as we're learning about how other agencies around the country have tried to navigate this benefits-based model, you want to keep it as simple as you can, because the more variables that you have into it that you need to try to adjust for, the more opportunity for litigating what really happened and really didn't. And so if you, and we will work in consultation with the Legislative Revenue Office, but if you have some assumptions about what you anticipate to happen in the future, which an economic forecast does, and you believe that the methodology that you're looking at and historically reflects that or closely reflects that, or you can make an adjustment for that, you set that. And then if there is a dramatic change, and the emphasis is on dramatic change, we aren't going to try to measure little changes, but if there is a dramatic change in a number of events, whether it's economic, economic to the effect that we have to reduce budgets at agencies and have a reduced staffing level. There are assumptions that we're going to have a certain level of resource that's going to execute the activities that will help generate the enforcement revenue. So there will be a number of things that we will agree to up front, that if there are events that warrant us to revisit this, we will revisit it. And then at that time, we would revisit it with the experts to help us understand, well, what would that mean to the baseline? And so that's the approach. But in terms of incrementally seeing little changes and making adjustments, that's not what is done for these models. It gets too complex, and there's a diminishing return of the level of resource that it takes to measure that baseline.
Follow-up,
please.
Well, I understand we will have a cap on this. So, and of course, then the establishment of the cap becomes very important, too. And so it would be important, I think, for me to know, you know, what is the purchase price of this product, and then, you know, above that cap, justifying why it's 10% more, 20% more, you know, because I do have a concern with the discussion about risk in that, I mean, where's the risk? I mean, they're going to get paid, I mean, because we're putting aside the funds, number one, and number two, it's been tried in five other states, so I really question the risk level or the risk exposure to this company. So, and you know, it's not like the state of Oregon doesn't pay its bills. So my concern would also be that gap between an outright purchase price and the cap.
Madam Chair, if I may, Senator Telfer, what our plan is to report in an interim. I think we've discussed it in an e-board meeting. Once we've negotiated the contract, we will disclose all that. We will tell you, here's the purchase price, the not-to-exceed price. Here's what we anticipate the revenue streams to be over the duration of the project, when we anticipate, based on our projection or what we think our baseline is, our projection of revenues above the baseline, when we anticipate the vendor would be paid. And we will hope to be able to answer a lot of those questions for you after we've negotiated the contract, because, I mean, in due diligence for the state, we need to know those things as well. And the vendor needs to, because though we are setting aside revenues, the key is, what is that baseline? And, you know, the more growth or whatever, if it is a growth trend on the baseline, some states sometimes it's a declining trend, but there are risks to the vendor, too, depending on what that baseline is that's set as to how quickly the revenues will be realized. And so we will be happy to have that conversation once we know the details after our negotiations.
Is anybody here on the e-board?
No.
Because they haven't gone through all this inquiry and analysis, and to throw them the question, then.
Well, the e-board is not.
Is Ways and Means.
Yeah, right, I know, but they have not been involved in all this detail concern.
Senator Talbot, they have been involved in terms of this, in the budget note, and trying to determine the enforcement revenue. Mm-hmm. So, and this bill, of course, will be going down to Ways and Means, so they presumably will be going through these same issues next week.
Well, my point, Madam Chair, is that this decision should be based on what is the best return to the state with the best process, and not based on we don't have an alternative method of financing it. That to me just bothers me greatly to think that we might be doing something that is not the best bottom line for the state because we don't have the credit line, we can't borrow, we're so broke that we can't buy this as a normal replacement part of our ongoing processes. I mean, that's a sad commentary on the state of this state. And I'd like that to be made very clear to the...
Well, I think it would be appropriate for the two of us and maybe the others who are interested to testify when this comes up in Ways and Means to make sure the letter does reflect that.
Yeah.
But just to make sure that they understand what this committee...
And the benefit-based contract may be in the best interest of the state. I mean, that may be.
Right.
But we shouldn't be forced into just one alternative because we don't have what would be a normal method of procuring this product and this service.
Okay. Other discussion? All right. Well, it's been a good discussion. You've seen the letter. Paul, should the motion include the letter, the motion to refer to Ways and Means with a due pass, with no recommendation, should the letter be in the motion?
I think that would help, Madam
Chair. Okay. Senator Morris, take it away.
Have we adopted the dash twos?
Oh, we have not. No. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1530 dated 2712.
Senator Morris has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1530. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1530 to the Committee on Ways and Means with a no recommendation, and an accompanying letter coming from Senator Burdick and Senator Morris, dated February 17th.
Okay, Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 1530 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation and accompanied by a letter signed by Senator Morris and Senator Burdick, dated February 17th. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, that's our last bill.
Now, are we going to talk about sales tax?
Yeah,
thought we'd get more people in here.
We're only on 1 hour notice now.
Lots of fun stuff we can do.
We have the revenue and fiscal impact statement ready.
Bring back SGR 202.
Yeah.
Do you have, did you want to say something before we adjourn?
Madam Chair, just to kind of give you a sense of where we think we are, of course, we never know at this stage, but we think there is at least two House bills that should be coming to you, one on some cleanup language around the energy credits from your omnibus credit bill from last session, and another on tribal property tax exemptions that passed the House for yesterday. That should be on its way, and there's another bill you may end up getting as well. So we would anticipate probably three bills, and the other possibility would be something coming from the county task force on timber payments, so we may see something related to that in the last week. On Monday, you have a hearing on Senate Bill 1586, which is the Senate version of House Bill 4040, which is the treasurer's investment bill.
Right.
So Senator Devlin will be here and go through that with you.
Okay. And this will be kind of an oddball hearing because the main vehicle is in Ways and Means, but we have our own vehicle
right
here, so that we want to get the proper testimony on the record.
Yeah, I'm co-chief sponsor on that. So
yeah. So you'll get
both of them.
Okay, good. All right. With that, we are adjourned. Adjourned.